Blog Talk Radio.
Tuning in today. My name is Yvette Preston, and I'm an associate real estate broker with Long & Foster, and I'm licensed in Maryland and Virginia, and we are here today to share with you a special topic. We are right now doing a 6-class series on the home buying process, and for those of you that are listening for the first time today, we started our series last Monday on personal finance, so that was episode one. So for those of you that are tuning in for the first time, if you missed that show, you can go over to our archive shows and definitely tune into that show, because this is a progression of shows. It's going to be 6 classes, and today we're going to be talking about credit reporting, the importance of good credit. And we have a special guest that's here today that is going to really break down this topic for you.
Oh, my God, and I guarantee you when Yvette tells you a little bit about our special guest today, you're going to wonder, how did y'all get her? I mean, because she is such a powerful speaker and educator, and I guarantee you by the end of this show, you're going to be so educated about credit, the importance of credit, why it's important, then you're going to want to share this information with everybody. And we encourage you to do that. So we encourage you to share the link to the show, because all of the information you're going to hear today, instead of trying to remember everything that our guest is going to talk about, you can just share the link, and then they can hear for themselves. So Yvette, you want to tell everybody about our special guest today?
Absolutely. Our special guest, a community outreach officer at Fulton Bank, and she was a mortgage loan officer and vice president at SunTrust Mortgage for 31 years.
Wow.
And has been in the banking industry for over 40 years.
Wow.
So definitely our guest, I would say, is very knowledgeable about anything related to mortgage loans, credit, and so that's why we're so happy for our special guest to be here today. I just want to share with you some special civic activities that our special guest is also a part of. She's appointed to the State of Virginia Fair Housing Board by Governor Terry McAuliffe
Wow.
in 2014 and reappointed by Governor Ralph Northam, also appointed to the City of Richmond Affordable Housing Trust Fund Oversight Board by Mayor Dwight C. Jones and reappointed by Mayor LeVar Stoney, Virginia State University Regional F. Lewis School of Business Industry Council, member of the Humankind Board of Directors, member
wow.
of Chapter of the Lynx, Inc., I had to turn the page, and member of Richmond Alumni Chapter Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Inc. As you can see, our special guest today has a lot of accomplishments and is very serious about sharing this information and participating in the mortgage industry and helping in the community to educate others. And I want to introduce our special guest.
Please.
Our special guest today is Linda Melton with Fulton Bank. Linda, thank you so much for agreeing to be our special guest today.
Thank you.
Jawanza and Yvette, thank you so much for those very, very kind words. You all are really helping the community with a topic that is, it's just, I don't know, I think it's paramount. And when you talk about credit, there's so many different It credit just has so many different tentacles, and it can affect us in ways that we just don't even think about.
Right.
It affects our ability to build wealth. It affects our ability to get a job, to get insurance. It's just a subject that, as a community, we need to pay a lot of attention to. We need to think about. We need to put some deliberate thoughts into what we do and why we do the things that we do, because credit is one of those things that it's almost like a reputation. Once you ruin it, you've got to work really hard to reestablish it. And so if you have an opportunity to do things initially that won't hinder your credit, that won't stop you from having good credit, then let's take a look at what we can do to help you create and maintain good credit.
Okay. So, Linda, so would you say credit is king? You know, you hear people say cash is king. I would also lump credit into that category, because a lot of things that if you don't have credit, really cash can't even do anything for you in some, in many situations, especially in the mortgage industry.
Exactly. Credit is definitely king in the mortgage industry, because it's going to, your credit is an indication of your willingness to repay. Your credit is an indication of almost of your character. You know, how do you accept responsibility? What do you think of risk? Because when you get a credit card, when you purchase a loan, whenever a financial institution extends credit to you, they are expecting you to repay it. And so if you don't, then you have let them down. And
absolutely.
And just so yes. And they every you know, you may let one institution down, but then the next institution is going to look at how you treated the previous institution.
Yes.
Well, you know, Linda, I think that, and we were talking about this a little bit last week with Mike Kao, and I'd love your perspective on it. When it comes to conversations like we're having tonight about credit, there are some communities, some cultures, that this is a nightly dinner time conversation. You know, they talk about this at the dinner table. You know, it's something that it's important, and they discuss it, and they make sure, you know, families discuss it, the parents make sure that their children understand it, because they understand that credit is going to affect the quality of life of their children. It's going to affect where you live, you know, like you mentioned, it can affect the type of job you have or don't, you know. So could you talk about the importance of even having these type of discussions at the dinner table, you know, parents educating their children on credit, so that, you know, those communities that have fallen behind financially can build themselves up, and it all understand. It all comes down to their understanding of money, how it works, credit, and how it works.
You know, Juwanza, you bring up an important point, because when you teach children good habits, you know, we talk about don't talk, don't eat with your mouth open, and all of those kind of things. You know, we do the etiquette things, but there's also financial etiquette, and that's what you're talking about. You're talking about how do you teach children from a very early age the importance of repaying debt, the importance of not overspending, the importance of being able to have choices. And there are all kinds of ways. You don't have to sit down and lecture at the dinner table to your kids, you know, but you can teach them, you can give them an allowance. And with that allowance, you can teach them how to spend within their means. With that allowance, you can teach them the importance of good credit and how it affects interest. So let's say that, you know, you give your child a weekly allowance of $20, but the child sees something that they want for that cost $40. So as a parent, you may say, okay, I will loan you the additional $20, but it's going to be at an interest rate of 1%. And, you know, you have faith in your child. You know, you've raised them right, or at least you thought you did. And that child said, oh, that's mom and dad. I don't have to pay them back. And they don't pay you back at that 1% interest rate. But you let it slide because you're a good parent. But you use that as a teaching moment. So 6 months goes down the road, and your child comes back to you and says, they still have that $20 a week allowance. They still have not paid you back the $20 that you loaned them at 1%. But they've come back to you again, and they found an item that's $40. You go, I can make a point. So instead of 1% this time, you charge them a 5% interest rate. Well, why did you do that, parent? Well, because son or daughter, on the last transaction, you didn't pay me. And I gave you a very favorable interest rate of 1%, but you didn't pay me back. And so the penalty for bad behavior is a higher interest rate. And that's a way that you can teach a child responsibility, because the difference between a 1% interest rate and a 4% interest rate and a 5% interest rate is 4%. So that's 4 cents on a dollar more that you have to pay me back. You could have had that 4 cents and done something else with it, but your behavior dictates that you are not responsible. So therefore, I'm going to try to get more of my money from you up front. So that's just one way you can teach a child. And you can teach them about interest, and you can teach them about living within their means. You can take that scenario and take it right down to son or daughter, you know, this is our home financial situation. Sometimes it's good to let children know just what expenses a parent has. But that child, you know, just because the kid down the street is wearing $200 sneakers doesn't mean that in my house or our house we can afford $200 sneakers. That we're not going to do anything. We're not going to put your feet in jeopardy of being harmed. But we want to do other things. Maybe we want to take $50 and put towards your college education. What's more important, $200 tennis shoes or your coming out of school with no student loans?
Yes. You know, Linda, that is, I mean, great information, because often we learn bad habits. So sometimes parents are not aware that children are watching them concerning how they manage their finances. They may have questions concerning why this person can have these things and we can't have those things. And I would even say, even during the home buying process, I work with clients sometimes that, especially I'm working with a young lady right now, and her motivation for buying a home is because her son, who is, I think he's about 10 years old, asked his mother, could we have a home? Or maybe they had some type of discussion. And so that motivated her, and her credit score is great. And she's also teaching her son by even showing him, listen, you have to maintain your credit. You have to have good credit, and you can have these things. And even when we went looking at different homes, some things she didn't particularly like, or, you know, so it was just different things that he was watching. And a lot of times parents might not really know that the children are watching, but they may even be picking up some of these bad habits if you are demonstrating bad habits and not managing, or your finances, or bill collectors are calling, and that child might hear or see the parent stressed because maybe they got behind in some bills and now their credit is not as good. But that is such a great opportunity to
teach
at a young age, teach them young, and then when they become older, they will take control of their finances and their money and can save money. And there's a lot of purchasing power when you have good credit.
And sometimes, Linda, I'm sure, as you know, that you might have people, young people, who, let's say, just graduated from college, or just high school maybe, just graduated from high school, not even 20 years old yet, and got their first credit card at, say, 19, and by 20, they're in collections because they didn't have anybody to teach them good spending habits or the priority of money and managing your credit. And so when they got that card and they just realized, you mean to tell me all I have to do is just swipe this card and I can walk out of the store with anything that I want to up to my limit? That can be a challenge for a lot of people.
That is a challenge for a lot of people. And so it's real funny. Things have changed in the last, I'm going to say, few years. When I was in school, credit card companies would just send you the credit card. Mm. Now it's a little bit more to it. And when I finished school, I went directly into banking. And I would see people who were in school with me, in college with me, and they had poor credit. I just couldn't figure out how did that happen. And you're exactly correct in that people, if you aren't taught these things, this is something that managing money, understanding money, managing your credit, all of those are things that they are almost like habits. And, you know, you have to get in the habit of doing what's right. You have to get in the habit of paying your bills. One of the things that you need to get in the habit of, and this has nothing to do with credit, is paying yourself first. And if you pay yourself first, and if you run into a little financial snafu, then maybe you'll have the money set aside to help you get out of that credit snafu that you have gotten yourself into. So it's just all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to think about the big picture. How does bad credit affect what I'm doing? How does good credit affect what I'm doing? How do you even know that you have credit? And some people don't find out that they have bad credit until it's time to purchase something.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness,
yes.
That is not the time that you want to find out that you have bad credit.
Mm-hmm.
You need to stay abreast of what's going on. It's your life. It's your reputation. It's your character. So just stand in there and hang in there and do the things that you need to do to make sure that you are not penalized for either having poor credit, no credit, or not handling the credit that you have in the proper manner.
Linda, your phone was crackling a little bit. Are you on the speaker?
I am.
Oh, okay.
Is this better?
Much.
Okay.
There we go. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. You know, we have callers tuning in all the time. Listen, if you have a question, you're listening to this information and you want to talk to the expert, all you have to do is just press 1 if you're listening by phone, and then we can bring you on and you can ask your question or make your comment. We have got a lot of we've got questions that we know that you all would want to know, and so we're going to ask those questions. But, you know, what's interesting, Linda, is that a lot of times people don't realize that even as they're going out and purchasing items and paying for them or not paying for them when it's time to pay for them, that somebody's keeping score, okay? Somebody is monitoring this. Could you talk about the credit score and why it's important to even know what your credit score is?
So the credit score is your history, your credit history expressed as a number. And the lower the score, the higher you are as a risk. The higher the score, the lower you are. Let me see if I can reverse that, because that's getting confusing. So if your credit, if you have a high credit score, you're not seen as a high risk person. If you have a low credit score, you are seen as a high risk person, meaning that, you know, that score. Remember, I was talking about character and your willingness to repay. Well, that score is indicative of your character. That score is indicative of your willingness to repay. And so it's almost like putting your best foot forward. And that credit score, an 850 credit score, well, that's your absolute best foot. A 300 credit score means that you're probably dragging both feet. And so, you know, whereas you're not always expected to be the absolute best, but you never want to be the worst either. And so when it comes to scores, 750 to 850 is considered excellent. And, you know, when your credit score is in that range, you have so many more opportunities that open up to you as far as interest rates, as far as what kind of credit cards you can get. So that 750 to 850 just opens doors. 700 to 749, you're still in good shape, okay? You may not have all of the opportunities that you would have with the higher tier, but you're still in good shape. 650 to 699, it's getting kind of shaky. And in the world of the pandemic, you know, on our mortgage side, things have tightened up considerably because we know people have lost jobs. We know that some people are in financial straits. And so as a mortgage lender, we have to look at things just a tad bit more carefully now than we would have, let's say, in November. If your score is 550 to 649, that's now in the poor range. And your options are getting smaller and smaller. And then if you're anywhere from 300 to 549, you know, you are almost optionless. As a culture, we like options. So, you know, you don't want to have to take what's given to you. You want to increase that credit score so that you get those options. You want the options that everybody else has.
That's right.
And that's, you know, that's when people look at your credit score, the higher the score, the more options. The lower the score, your little slice of the pie is getting smaller all the time.
Well, you know, Linda, even when you're talking about the credit score, that's even if you're qualifying for an apartment, with this show, these series of shows is specifically trying to help prepare people for home ownership, but also even before you actually get to a place where you can own your own home, even you have to have a credit score to rent an apartment. And so your score may not have to be as high, but at least in the 500s or within that category, which is not even considered good in the mortgage industry. So definitely when you're thinking about purchasing a home and qualifying for a mortgage loan, that score is definitely something that's going to drive, like you mentioned, the interest rate and even how much you can qualify for, because I can imagine if you're a higher risk, then that's less money that you can also borrow as well. Is that correct?
That is correct. Let's use a $150,000 example. And if you have a 3% interest rate, then at $150,000 with a 3% interest rate, your principal and interest is $632.41. But, and let's say that 3% interest rate is for the excellent or the very good score. But let's say that you don't have that and you end up paying 5%. So that payment for the same property has now gone to $805.23. That is $172.82 more.
Wow.
That you are paying for bad behavior.
Mm.
So
penalized.
You have been penalized for your credit. You have been penalized for your past. And you could take that $172 and pay off another debt. You could that $172 may cause you not to even qualify for that $150,000 sales price or loan amount. Let me rephrase that, loan amount. So you can see how the interest rate that you pay has a real effect on your life, on your lifestyle, on how much house you can actually buy, how much cash you need to buy the house. It's all kinds of things. And all of that could be determined by looking at your credit score.
Now, granted, we want to make this clear to the people that are listening. You know, this is not a judgment call because things happen. We understand that. Things do happen. There are people who, because of a bad decision, somebody else messed up their credit, you know. I mean, I've heard situations where somebody got stuck with somebody else's credit, you know, because they may have co-signed for somebody in good faith, thinking that the person was going to pay them back or do the right thing, and the person didn't, and as a result, it messed their credit up. And they had good credit prior to making that, unwise decision to co-sign. So we're not saying that if you have bad credit that it's necessary that you're a bad person necessarily. Okay,
oh, no,
we're not
no,
saying
no.
that.
Never.
No.
Or irresponsible, because we know people lose jobs and we know different situations happen. So basically, this is just to educate you so that we're going to also talk about how can you reestablish yourself. But Linda, can you also talk about how is your credit score determined?
Oh, my goodness. So the credit score is just a combination of things. Your credit score there are five factors that play into your credit score. The top one, or what has the most weight, is your payment history. So your payment history is how have you paid your creditors and for how long have you paid those creditors and have you done it properly? Have you made your payments on time as agreed? The next highest weighted factor is the amount you owe on each credit card. And, you know, it's wonderful to have a $5,000 credit limit. But does that mean that you need to charge $5,000? No. That just simply means that based on your income and your current debts, this is what the creditor thinks that you are able to handle. Ideally, if you have a credit card, your balance should never go more than a third of the limit. And that's it. A credit card should not be used as to maintain a lifestyle. A credit card should be used to with the intention of knowing that you can pay that debt, that debt is not going to mount up. The length of your credit history, how long you need to demonstrate that you are capable of and have been capable for a period of time of paying a debt. You know, something that a credit card that you opened 2 months ago, that's not indicative of a history. But a credit card that you opened 10 years ago and you've paid on time, that's showing that you have a lengthy credit history. New credit, that also plays into what your credit score is. And then the types of credit. And when I say types of credit, I'm talking about credit cards, installment loans, open-ended accounts. And just so you know what the numbers are, your payment history is 35% of your credit score. The amount that you owe is 30%. The length of your credit history is 15%. Your new credit is only 10%, and the types of credit that you use count for 10%. So those are all of the factors that go into. It's almost like there's a box over in the corner, and you take all of that information and you toss it into that box, and based on what it is, it comes out weighted. And that's how you're going to get your credit score.
Everybody, our special guest is Linda Melton of Fulton Bank in Richmond, Virginia. I know you are loving this show. I know I am. If you have a question and you're listening by phone, all you have to do is just press 1, and we'll bring you on, and you can ask your question or make your comment. Linda, let's go back for a second. I mean, we talked just briefly. I gave the example of somebody co-signing for somebody, and as a result of that, they ended up with bad credit because somebody else messed their credit up. Could you talk about co-signing for a moment? Just would you advise it? I mean, it's an option for people. People do it. What is your take on co-signing? And if you could also talk about the authorized user as well.
Well, you know, Juwan's a co-signing. If I kind of chuckle when I say this, if you can't afford or don't want to afford to pay that debt, then I strongly suggest that you not co-sign, because you are just as responsible for the debt that you co-signed for as if you did it yourself. Now, I know a lot in a lot of families, it's just history. You know, mama signs for son signs for daughter, and it just goes on and on and on. And there's nothing wrong with helping your family. I'm 100% for families helping families. I'm even for friends helping friends. But if you co-sign on a $300 a month car payment and something happens to the primary borrower, you are responsible for that payment. And if you don't want to make that payment, or if you don't want your credit because that payment isn't being made, then I would suggest that you not co-sign. Okay? Sometimes that's, you know, when you earlier we talked about how do you teach children responsibility?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that might be one of those life lessons that a parent teaches a child. You know, son or daughter, I know that you want this 2020 Mustang. But, you know, I saw a Mustang the other day. It was $52,000. I almost fell over backwards. But maybe you can't have a 2020 Mustang at $52,000. Maybe you need a 2015 Mustang at $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, versus co-signing for a $52,000 Mustang. So I'm not an advocate of co-signing, and I'm not condemning anyone who does it. I'm just saying when you do it, you must be willing to accept the risk and the responsibility that comes along with co-signing. And you also asked about
authorized user.
An authorized user. Well, people, authorized user accounts are sometimes used to help build credit. But the flip side is, because if you're an authorized user, whatever the user does, you're going to get credit for it on your credit report. But you could also be harmed in that you are an authorized user. Let's say you've never even seen the credit card.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever put you on that account as an authorized user has $150 a month payment.
Mm-hmm.
With some mortgage payments, that could be counted as your debt.
Oh.
And it could be a matter of maybe you don't qualify for the house you want with that $150 a month payment.
And may I also add something, Linda, there, because last week, that's very important, because last week Michael talked about that debt-to-income ratio. So that would contribute to that debt-to-income ratio that could possibly cause you not to be able to qualify for a mortgage.
Exactly. Exactly. And so when you make these decisions, you have to think about what are the long-term effects? How is this going to affect me? Just like that authorized user could have helped build your credit up, that authorized user can tear it down also. What if something happens? They can't make the payment. So, once again, credit is one of those things that you have to kind of look at from the broad spectrum. You know, it may be good for this, but it may not be good for that. And take into account all of the possibilities. You know, be very, don't be narrow-minded. You got to think about what you're doing, what your goals are in life.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Often you hear people talk about, you know, I have to maybe protect my heart or different things like that. You have to protect your credit.
you know, you do.
Because that really is something. I mean, you have to look at it like that, and it is better if you learn the right way. We talked also last week about preparation. So that's a part of the preparation. You want to prepare with your finances, and that's part of preparing. And like you said, we are talking about opportunities to create wealth. If you learn how to manage your finances, if you learn how to manage your credit, that's how people advance in life. And that's why real estate, being able to own property, is one of those greatest opportunities. It's still the American dream, but even more than that, you can leave a legacy, you can leave an inheritance, you can leave, you know, you can do so much. Just the pride of ownership and having collateral, all of that speaks to people in the community and even lenders or whoever it is that you may need to negotiate or whatever you need to do as far as when it comes to your finances sometimes. And we're talking about also protecting your finances and your credit. So, Linda, I also can you also talk about the three big credit reporting agencies? Because we talked about the score, but there are three big credit reporting agencies that score that mortgage lenders look at.
In fact, yes, because, you know, when you were saying prepare, preparation, that those three bureaus came to my mind, because one of the ways that you can prepare, number one, there are three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And be clear, not every creditor reports to each one. So your credit score can vary between the three, because someone who reports to Equifax may not report to TransUnion and vice versa. So when you are preparing to purchase a home, one of the things that you can do even before you go to see a mortgage banker or a mortgage lender to get pre-qualified, you can request your own credit report. And by law, you can get one free credit report per bureau per 12 months. And you don't, and to get that, you want to go to annualcreditreport.com. And I would not get all three at the same time, because you're going to get 40 pieces of paper. And it's going to be like, oh, my goodness, what do I do with all of this paper? So knowing that we're on the East Coast, and most East Coast companies report to Equifax, you may want to get your Equifax report first. If you don't if you get it and you don't understand it, then find a trusted advisor, someone that not Mary down the street. Find a trusted advisor that you can go to, not Joe down the street either, and talk to about what's on that credit report. Then after you work on that one, maybe take 3 or 4 months, look at it, study it, know that you know what's on it. You may want to go to Experian, and then you've kind of got a grasp on, you know, what the information is on that report, and so then you can go to the next one. Well, look at that, study it 3 or 4 months, and then get the TransUnion. But one of the things that you need to consider when you're getting these three credit reports is they don't have scores. Now, is that a bad thing? Not necessarily. We place a lot of emphasis on credit scores. But if you can look at your credit report, number one, and see that there are no errors, everything on it is factual, and it's true, then if there's nothing derogatory there, then you should have a good credit score. If there's tons of derogatory information on that credit report, then you don't need the score. You need to figure out, how am I going to correct the wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there are things that need to be disputed, then the Federal Trade Commission has lots of information on its website about how to dispute credit, along with each one of the bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, all have information on their websites as to how to dispute credit, how to clean up credit reports. So just because you don't get a score, I wouldn't be upset about that, and I wouldn't pay right off the bat to get a score. I would see what I'm working with and then figure out if I need to spend additional money to pay for that credit score.
I
was going to say, a lot of people go to Credit Karma.
Mm-hmm.
And Credit Karma is a for-profit business. And when you get those scores, there are all kinds of algorithms out there that are used to calculate that score.
Mm-hmm.
And Credit Karma is certainly going to give you a good indication, but it's not going to have the same score that a mortgage lender is going to have. So just be kind of careful as to how you accept scores from credit reporting agencies. And there are differences between bureaus and agencies. There are only three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And then each one of them, they are little local, what they call credit agencies, but they all get their information from the three bureaus.
Everybody, this is great information, and we encourage you to share this information. If you're listening to this show, either you tuned in because this information is for you or it's for somebody that you know. And again, rather than try to remember everything that you're hearing, you can just copy the link, share the link with them, and we're going to make sure that we give you Linda Melton's contact information because you can tell she's got a wealth of knowledge, and you may have some other questions that you may want to talk to her about. Linda, you talked about briefly disputes. You know, what if somebody has something, they're disputing some information that showed up on their credit report and they're disputing it, but what if it's real? What if the information that they're looking at, if there's no dispute about it, they looked at it, it's derogatory, and they own it, and they want to know, how long is this going to stay on my credit report? Because they may have heard somewhere that if you just don't pay it for a while, that after 7 years or so, it's just going to fall off anyway, and then you don't have to worry about that. Is that true, or is that false?
That is pretty much false. It's a true false, okay? And as crazy as that sounds, so when something first starts going wrong, if you look at a credit report, you will see that let's take a credit card, and everything is fine and dandy, and you pull your credit report, and your credit card says that you have an R1 rating. Well, the R stands for revolving, which means it's a revolving credit card, and the 1 says that you are paying on time. You kind of slip off and stop paying. You're going to see that 1 turn to a 2, and that 2 turn to a 3, that 3 turn to a 4, and eventually if you don't pay it, that 4 is going to turn into a 9. And that 9 simply means you didn't pay it, and now that account is charged off. that's going to hang around for a little while. But let's say that that creditor says, I'm going to a collection agency and I'm going to ask them, I'm going to sell this bad debt to them, and I'm going to allow this collection agency to work to collect the debt. Well, years and years ago, yes, you could sit it out, and eventually after 7 years, it would drop off. But then creditors got smart and collection agencies got smart, and they said, oh, no, no, no. We're not going to just let that debt go. So if you have a collection, the general answer is that that collection will stay on your credit report for 7 years plus 180 days from the date the account first became past due. But let's say that first collection was with ABC Collection Company, and ABC says, you know, we have worked this account for 5 years. We're not getting anywhere. But if there's somebody out there, QYZ Collection Company, that's willing to take this collection and work it a little longer, then they may sell, ABC may sell to QYZ. And guess what? Your 7 years starts off all over again.
Oh, boy.
So now you had 5 years with ABC, and you're looking at another potential 7 years with QYZ, so you're up to 12 years. Okay? A collection could easily turn into a judgment. And it's getting uglier at every step. Okay?
Wow.
So you've had your collection for a little while, and you suffered through that. Now it's turned into a judgment. And that judgment can stay on the credit report for another 7 years. And guess what? Just when you think that that 7 years is up, they can refile. And if they refile, it's going to be there for another 7 years.
Wow.
So it was a judgment right before that seven-year period. The person that you owe or the company that you owe can go in and refile that judgment. You're up for another 7 years, so it's gone from 7 to 14 if it's never paid. Okay?
Yeah.
And then there's the ultimate. It's a bankruptcy. Because, you know, I've just got debt, and I don't know what to do with it, and so I'm going to declare bankruptcy. And a bankruptcy is going to stay on your credit report for anywhere from 7 to 10 years. And what's the difference? A Chapter 7 versus a Chapter 13. So a Chapter 7 will remain on your credit report for 10 years, and a Chapter 13 would remain on your credit report for 7 years.
Wow.
So there are some definite circumstances.
Go ahead. I was just thinking that, wow, it behooves you to monitor your credit. Again, we know stuff happens to everybody. A lot of people have filed bankruptcy. A lot of people have had judgments. But this show should be incentive, now that you're getting the information from the expert, to really monitor your credit, to really do your homework, to do your due diligence, and do what you can to ensure that your credit is maintained and that you just don't listen to any and everybody when they say, oh, you don't have to do this. I know somebody who was in that situation and they did this. Every situation is different, and so you need to listen to the experts, and we're just fortunate enough to have Linda Melton here with us today. Yvette?
And absolutely, because you want to learn what you need to do yourself, because a lot of times people may say, okay, I want to purchase a house. I know I have all this debt. I know I have to take care of it or whatever the case may be, but they don't necessarily know how. They may turn to a credit repair agency that may charge them a monthly fee, but it's best if you can do it on your own, because there's also additional things that a lender may require, that if you go through a credit repair agency to pay them to do something, the lender may say, oh, no, we have to change something that was done previously as far as a dispute or whatever it may be. But, Linda, can you talk about that a little bit more, about going to a credit repair agency maybe to help a person correct their credit? And then we want to talk about what are the things that a person can do themselves to improve their credit score.
Because, you know, it seems to me, Linda, that a person is paying a credit agency to repair their credit. That money that they're paying the credit repair agency could be going to pay a debt.
Sure could. And, you know, the state of Virginia has some guidelines as far as when a credit reporting agency, or not a credit reporting agency, a credit repair agency, I'm sorry, can charge you, and how much they can charge you up front. But, you know, sometimes they're just putting a Band-Aid on it. Or sometimes one of their favorite tricks is, we talked about this earlier, an authorized user. And not all mortgage programs allow authorized users' credit to count in your credit score. So, you know, maybe that's what your credit repair company told you to do. You know, go talk to your mom, go talk to your dad, and see if you can become an authorized user. And then you go to the mortgage company, and they go, oh, no, you can't do that. And you have to back that out. So now you've gotten all your hopes up high because, you know, you know that mom and dad pay their credit, their bills on time. So their credit's excellent. But maybe you can't rely on mom and dad. You might have to stand on your own two feet. So you need to know the guidelines of the credit repair agency. What are they going to do? What are they going to suggest? Because you don't want to pay somebody $99 a month. After 6 months, you've paid them $600, only to find out that everything that they've done, you have to undo because they just put a Band-Aid on the situation. In Richmond, there are some HUD-certified housing counselors. They don't charge a dime. You can talk to them. You can work with them. The only difference between paying somebody to fix your credit and doing it yourself is patience and endurance. There are no magic. There's no magical formula to improve your credit. Okay? There are people who can talk a good game, but there's no magical formula. So, you know, I've heard credit repair companies say, well, if they didn't put the decimal place here, or they didn't put the period here, or they didn't dot the I, or they didn't cross the T, then they have to remove it. You know, there are resources out there to help people know where the decimal place is supposed to be, what I is supposed to be dotted, and what T is supposed to be crossed. Now, the other thing that I think, you know, so maybe $99 a month isn't a lot to you. You know, that's no big deal. I can handle that. If you pay somebody to fix your credit, you might do it again.
That's right.
If you have to sit through the pain and suffering, the patience and endurance that it's going to take to fix your credit, you may think twice before you allow those things to happen again, because you don't want to have to take your time, your energy, to fix it again. And so there's a lot to be said about how you – the process. And there's no telling what you'll learn in the process that you can go into your community – and possibly teach people and help them to get to the point where you are now at, because you did take the time to do and to correct and make those changes. So there's all kinds of benefits to doing it yourself. versus having someone else to do it.
And so what are some of those things that a person can do to improve that credit score, Linda? And I know you've been saying some things periodically through the broadcast, especially paying your bills on time, reducing your debt, reducing your credit card debt down to what, a third or 30% of whatever that balance is can also improve your score. Are there some other things that a person can do?
You said pay your bills on time, keep your credit card balances low, pay down your cash balances. I mean, pay down the balances on your credit card, and don't apply for more credit. Don't use one credit card to get you out of debt with another credit card, because now you're just in double debt. We talked about never co-signing, and review your credit report. But I think the most important thing that you can do is pay your bills on time and don't overextend yourself. You know, if you can't afford it, then save for it. There's no need in getting yourself in debt unnecessarily.
I agree. And after, say, for instance, now a person pays off a credit card, should that person close that account?
So the short answer is no, Yvette, but there's two sides. Remember I talked about what are the components of a credit score?
Yes.
Well, one of those components is how long have you had that debt? Well, if that's a credit card that has been open for 5, 10, 15 years, you don't want to close it because you're closing out your credit history. And your credit history is a substantial part of your credit score. Now, if it's a credit card that you opened day before yesterday just to get a 10% discount, then close it. Get rid of it. Get rid of it before it even has any impact on your credit score. But those long-established credit cards that you have paid on time for years, no, don't close those. Do not close out your credit history.
Okay. Well, Linda, can you believe it? Already 7 o'clock. It might be a little after 7 o'clock. This hour always goes so fast.
I knew it would.
But you have answered a lot of questions. One last question I would like to ask for our listeners is, can a person still qualify for a mortgage loan after filing a bankruptcy or foreclosure?
Yvette, yes. You can get a mortgage after a bankruptcy, after a foreclosure. The guidelines are going to depend on what type of loan you are seeking. I can say that generally after a bankruptcy has been discharged, depending on the program, for 2 to 4 years, you could possibly purchase a home. And the same thing with a foreclosure. But what you have to make sure of is that, think about a bankruptcy. If you have a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, you have wiped out all of your debt, because that's what a Chapter 7 does. It wipes out all of the debt. And if you haven't had any debt for 2 years, or you've just come out of the bankruptcy, then you don't want anything derogatory to show up, because that's showing that, oh, my goodness, filed bankruptcy, but I didn't learn anything.
Mm.
So whenever you have a bankruptcy or a foreclosure, you want to show that. And let me say something for the listeners. I know that there are exceptions to every rule. You didn't know you were going to have a medical emergency. You didn't know a spouse or a parent was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I'm not talking about the things that happen in our lives. I'm talking about just kind of going along and not paying attention. I'm not talking about special circumstances or unforeseen circumstances. And I just want people to know because, you know, sometimes mortgage loan officers can come off so harsh that and sound insensitive. We're not harsh. We're not insensitive. We do have a set of rules and guidelines to go by, and we know that there are exceptions to every rule and every guideline. So the things that I've said tonight are very general and may or may not be applicable to your situation. So, and I feel like I have to say that because I don't want people to think, well, my goodness, this is very firm yes or no. But be willing to discuss your specific circumstance with your loan officer so that that loan officer has a feeling about what you've been through, why you are in the situation you're in, you know, what has occurred in your life. And one of the things, and I'll be quiet after this, but one of the things that you may be required to ask, or you may somebody may ask you to do, is to write a credit explanation letter. And that letter could consist of what happened, what I did about it, and why it won't happen again.
That's great, Linda. And it's important for people to understand, and I'm glad that you explained it like that, that you can always start all over again, and it's just a matter of just taking the time, educating yourself, which is what you're actually doing today by listening to this broadcast.
Being disciplined,
and following instructions. So I always tell people, but you have to follow the instructions, and you'll get there. So definitely home ownership is still an opportunity for all, but yes, you do have to meet the requirements, but you can get there.
And you have to follow the instructions to the letter. You know, sometimes people do, you know, let's say the loan officer might give them 5 things to do and they do 4, you know, and come back and wonder why, you know, things aren't working out. You have to do exactly what you're told to do. You have to be patient. You have to be disciplined. You didn't get into the situation overnight. It might take 6 months to get out. It might take a year. But if you are steadfast and you continue to do what you're instructed to do by your loan officer, you will get there.
And we said last week, listen to the professionals. You can interview people. You can interview loan officers. You can give Linda a call. You can give me a call. And we welcome your questions, your calls to share, give you additional information because it might be a question that you didn't necessarily want to ask on the air, but you may want to speak to Linda concerning a question that you may have. But Linda, we are so, again, honored that you agreed to come on the radio broadcast.
Yes.
I do facilitate for Virginia Housing and Development Authority in-person first-time home buyer classes, and Linda is one of my favorite presenters, and she teaches on personal finance, credit reporting, and the role of the lender, and always does a great job. And as usual, has done a great job.
I knew she would. I was expecting that. I didn't expect anything less. Linda, how can people get in contact with you if they have questions, they want to, you know, get started, they think they're ready, and they say, okay, what do I do now? Do I find a real estate agent first? Do I find a loan officer first? I heard Linda Melton on Health, Wealth, and Real Estate, and she seems like she's the person that I need to talk to. How can they reach you?
So please feel free to reach me by either email or phone, and my email is lmelton, M-E-L-T-O-N, at Fulton Bank, that's F-U-L, T-O-N-B-A-N-K.com, lmelton@fultonbank.com, or my phone number is 804-565-4452. 804-565-4452. I am so thankful to you, Jawanza and Yvette, for even allowing me and asking me to be a part of this very powerful broadcast. So thank you ever so much.
You're welcome, Linda. And we'll be in touch for maybe some future shows, but thank you so much.
Thank
and
you.
Again, we're honored.
Any parting words for our listeners, Linda, before you go? I mean, I don't know if there's anything that hasn't been said that needs to be said, but again, I want to keep on listening. I want you to keep talking.
No.
Parting words.
I'm just gonna tell you know, if you can dream it, you can do it.
Mm.
Wonderful.
Wow.
If you can dream it, you can do it.
That's inspiring.
You can do it.
Yes.
That is true. That is true. And anybody that's done it. We'll tell you that.
Absolutely.
That's true. That's true.
Everybody, our guest has been Linda Melton of Fulton Bank. Awesome, awesome, awesome interview. We encourage you to give her a call. Her contact information is also in the description on the page. So, again, thank you so much, Linda. We will definitely be in touch. And I'm full now. How about you, Yvette?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you. You all have a good evening.
Thank you too.
So okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
So that was Linda Melton, Community Outreach Officer with Fulton Bank. And as we started out the show, we said that this was going to be a powerful show. And as Jawanza said, we could continue on and on with so many, just addressing questions like this. But definitely feel free to tell others about the show. An hour after this broadcast, you should be able to listen to the archive, and you can also share the link with other people, maybe on your Facebook, family, and friends. This information is basic information no matter where you live. Although I have an office in the Georgetown, Washington, D.C. area, as well as in the Richmond, Virginia area, this information is basic. Credit reporting is something that you can use this general information. So definitely take advantage of using it for yourself as well as sharing it with others, because if you follow the steps, you will be able to increase your score. And it's nothing like seeing that score go up and up and up, because, again, as your score increases, then there's doors that may open for you, opportunities. And it's empowering to know that I have some that I have control over my destiny.
That's right.
You know, then you, like Linda said, if you can dream it, you can have it.
That's right. But you know what? Once you dream it, then you're going to have to start working that, okay?
That's right.
Because once you can dream it, and you can visualize it, and you can talk about it, and you can think about it, but at some point, if you have bad credit, you're going to have to start working on it.
That's right.
Okay? And once you start working on it, Just knock that out one bill at a time.
That's
one
right.
bill at a time. One bill at a time. You will do it, because think about it. The time is going to pass anyway. Some people look at their credit and they look at themselves. It's like standing at the foot of a mountain and they're like, oh, my God, I'll never get to the top. It's going to take so much time. Well, the time is going to pass anyway. So since it's going to pass anyway, do what you know you need to do, okay, and slowly but surely you're going to get there.
Set that goal.
Set it.
Set that goal. Put it a part of, make it a part of your plan, and set that goal. Maybe some people like to say at the beginning of the year or by the summer or whatever it may be. And again, go back, listen back to the personal finance show, because we talked about the importance of preparation, of savings, what lenders look for, what real estate agents look for as far as helping you to get ready to be able to purchase a home. But right now, no matter where you are in the process, you might be renting, you might be living with a parent, no matter what it is your situation is right now, we just want to share this information so you can begin to know the process, and that's what these shows are about. And they're different because it's a Q&A. There's an opportunity. We're getting to those questions that maybe people don't address in just regular educational workshops. So definitely continue to tune in next week, Monday, June 15th from 6 to 7, The Role of the Lender. That's episode 3, How to Qualify for a Mortgage Loan. And our special guest will be Michael Kao. He will be coming back again. And now he's going to share on The Role of the Lender. So definitely make sure you tune in. Remember to share this information with others and follow our broadcast, because then you can also be sent a reminder. And if you have any additional questions, you can email us at HWR, which stands for Health, Wealth, and Real Estate, HWR Blog Talk Radio at yahoo.com. That's HWR Blog Talk Radio at yahoo.com, or text 804-647-5868. Our broadcast is airing out of the Richmond, Virginia area, but we also, you might be in D.C., you might be in Maryland. I don't know where you might be listening from, but we want to hear from you.
Absolutely.
We want to hear from you and give us some feedback. So let us know how you like the show and any additional questions that you may have. Jawanza, do you have any closing words?
All I want to say is that nothing is impossible if you really are disciplined. I can't stress discipline enough. We can talk all day, but it's going to take discipline to do it. Okay, it's really going to take discipline, and you have to have your priorities in order. Okay, there are just going to be certain things that you're going to have to say no to because you're saying yes to your future. So you might have to say no to something else because you're saying yes to your house.
Yeah.
You're saying no to something else because you're saying yes to good credit. You're saying yes to your financial dreams. So discipline. You can do it, but it's going to take discipline. I just want to say thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening. And this is our offering to you, because a lot of times people are out there and they get information from a lot of sources. And it's important that you get information from the people that know. You might have had a cousin who had a brother who had a sister who knew somebody, you know, who said that this is how the process works. And they might have bought their house 10 years ago. Okay. You know how often laws change in lending and real estate? I mean, certain things that might have been applicable 10 years ago might not apply today. So you need to get in contact with the people who are doing it today.
That's right.
And make sure that you're dealing with people that are reputable and licensed.
Yeah.
Okay? That is so important. So I just want to say thank you again. Again, this show is for you. Share the information with somebody else. Put it on your Facebook. Put it on your Twitter. Share it. Because information is powerful, but not just information, but right information. Because bad information can be powerful too, okay? You just be doing the wrong thing, getting the wrong answer, you'll do the wrong thing. So make sure that you get right information. And how do you do that? You get it from the people that know.
Thank you again for listening, and we look forward to our next broadcast,
yep,
which will be next Monday. And remember, go back, listen to the other shows. Listen to this one again as well. Sometimes we have to go back and listen to the show again because it's just so much information in 1 hour, even though we went over a little bit. But thank you again so much. We appreciate you, and have a wonderful week.
Yep. And as I always say, you could be doing something else, but you've taken time out to spend it with my person, Yvette and Linda Melton. Again, my name is Jawanza. Who am I? I'm the one who in giving receives more. Who are you? Peace.
Peace.